It is an exciting time here at the Great Northern Radio Show. Anytime Sam, who's a well-traveled, respected jazz musician, shares some of his original music with us. His songs tonight are based on his family history, a story of Croatian immigrants, including his great-grandfather and great-grandmother who lived here in Virginia. Sam's dad, Matthew, plays the bass, but he's also an excellent writer who put the family story into words. So here to share a part of that story, Matthew Miltich.
Grandma accepted my kiss with resignation, as she accepted everything, it seemed to me. Her eyes were blue, her hair fine and white, and it seemed to me that even to my young touch, she was frail. Her English was broken and difficult to understand, but even so, she forbid her own children to speak the old language at home when they were little. No girl children were taught to read or write in the old country, only to work in the home and field. To me, she spoke never an unkind word, but I never saw her smile. Grandpa's English was as broken as Grandma's, but his spirit was not. If Grandma accepted all things with resignation, Grandpa scorned and repudiated the world's measurement of things, preferring his own. You could see it in the set of his lips and eyebrows and the way he held his head, his lifted jaw. He still raged against the injustices of the old country. The years in the open pit mines, men who judged him fit only for brute labor, who promised a mild climate like the old country, but sent him to the mines in northern Minnesota. He'd stowed away on a boat, my old man told me, to get away from being drafted by the Austrians. If his English was broken, he'd made it his own language, spoke it with authority and passion, and cursed fluently. Dad said that when he was a kid, if the old man came home drunk, he and his brothers would push the chest of drawers and bed against the bedroom door to keep him out. He was that frightening. He showed me Grandpa's razor strop in the bathroom, a heavy, broad leather belt. Misbehave, and he'd use the razor strop on you, my old man said. Yet when I was with him, Grandpa was mirthful. Even in his old age, he was powerful, with great wide shoulders and tremendous arms. They called him Big Andy in the mines, he told me, and no one ever beat him in arm wrestling. Once he and a big Swede went at it all day, he said, in hibbing, neither man able to put the other's arm down, but never beaten, he said. Yet his hands were beautiful, as if sculpted, unmarked by his boyhood and youth fishing in the Adriatic or by a lifetime in the pits. And with those hands, he'd hold my head or touch my face, then laugh and laugh. Sometimes his laughter was sardonic or black, but mostly it seemed to me he was simply amused. The world, as he grew older, seemed sillier and sillier as people forgot the lessons of both old country and new. The radio and television were full of nonsense, and he attended only to what deserved his attention: the making of wine, the preparing and eating of food, the cultivating and harvesting of his garden. The backyard of the house in Virginia was narrow and small, but Grandpa gardened it intensely. Most of dinner or supper in summer came right out of the backyard. It was by Grandpa and Grandma's example that I came to understand that food itself is sacramental, to be prayed over, savored, taken in gratitude, eaten slowly and with decorum. Grandpa and Grandma held their forks and knives differently from the way my mother instructed us at home, but in their hands they seemed used rightly. They used bread as utensils, dipping it in their food, cleaning their plates. When the meal was finished, the plates glowed as if washed. Starvation, Grandpa and Grandma gave me to understand, was something they knew firsthand in the old country. At that table, I could imagine my father's family gathered. He described a winter night black as death outside the windows, everyone hungry, the littlest kids at table, the older girls helping Grandma, Grandpa just home from the pit, stripped to the waist, the fierce cold already making frost patterns on the windows, steam from the potatoes. Grandpa stands at the sink, his face, his hair, his chest, his back stained red with ore dust. Everything quiet while they wait for him to wash. He turns to the children. Look at me, he says. He shows them the upturned palms of his hands, his fingers spread. Is this what you want? Work in the pit? Don't go to school, he says. This is what you get. They had gone back to Dalmatia, Dad said, when he was 9. Grandpa, he said, never meant to leave the old country for good. Grandma was against going back. She wanted to stay in the new country where even the poor didn't starve, but they went. Dad remembered Grandpa's village. They had nothing, he said, only the sea. The sea was their garden. He remembered stealing grapes with his cousins. Grandpa wanted to build a hotel by the sea, he said, but there were thieves and government corruption. The family left Grandpa's village and went to Grandma's village. Dad remembered the old stone house there, the well and bucket outside, the stable, an outdoor oven for baking bread, olive trees seen from the bedroom window. He remembered a pretty girl named Kata in the village and an instrument played like a fiddle, how he learned to play. Once, he said, his old man took him to the ancient walled city of Dubrovnik and bought him a steak in a restaurant. Finally, after a year, money all gone and no prospects, they took the steamship back to America, the trains back to Virginia, Minnesota, Grandpa back to the iron mines. Grandma died in winter. I was just starting high school then. My old man and I arrived at the house in Virginia one day and found Grandpa alone in the kitchen. Grandma, he said, had decided to die. She was upstairs in bed and wouldn't take food. We found her up there. A glass of milk was going bad on the chest of drawers. Just as Grandpa said, she told Dad it was time for her to die. To me, she looked as old as a person can get, frail as a nestling in her bed, peaceful and resigned. There's nothing you can do, Grandpa told us. But no, Dad said. He called an ambulance and men came, unloaded a stretcher, came into the house and up the stairs to get Grandma. I remember them carrying her down the stairs and out through the porch and front door. She drew her old hand in from where it grasped the side rail just in time to avoid having it crushed in the door frame. In the hospital, Dad left me by her side as she lay in her bed. I gave her tiny sips of ice water by dipping a straw into a glass, capping the open end with my finger, then lifting the finger to let the water run into her mouth. I held her hand, and she looked helplessly into my eyes. Late in the afternoon, Dad cut Grandpa's hair in the kitchen of the old house. Before I married her, Grandpa told him. I wondered if she was strong enough. No, Pa, Dad said. Don't say that. Grandpa shrugged. No matter now, Grandpa said. On the day we buried her, snow began to fall in the cemetery in Virginia. The trees were gray, the ground frozen and snow-covered. My brothers and sisters and I, all but the youngest two who stayed home with neighbors, began to cry as Grandma's coffin was lowered into the earth. Our aunts and uncles stood with us, grim and silent. There were cousins in the cemetery with us, too. My brothers and sisters and I wept. I felt the tears run on my cold cheeks. I knew it was not for Grandma's death that I wept, but for her life.